Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Steve Hilton Show. Today we are talking about, the sort of focus is San Francisco, but actually the issues that we're going to get into in this conversation really apply to the whole of the state of California and what's going on and what's going wrong in so many of our biggest cities and smaller towns as well. Because of all sorts of things, you know the list, too much bureaucracy and regulation and all the politicians arguing with each other and nothing getting done. And in the meantime, things seem to spiral downwards. And in particular in San Francisco, that's what our next guest has written about. She's a member of the editorial board of the San Francisco Chronicle. You know her very well if you follow the show, Emily Hoven, who's fantastic and has written a really, really, along with her colleagues, a very detailed, very impressive article, an editorial opinion article, but it's got tons of facts and argument in it about why San Francisco is on the brink of collapse and what we can do to turn it around. Here's Emily. Emily, what I loved about this piece was that it was so different to what you normally get in a new newspaper editorial. It was like a real piece of policy work. It took me back to my days working on policy back in the UK government, because it was just so full of great analysis and then recommendations. That's the first thing I want to say. Very different from anything I've seen before. Why don't you, if you could just sort of take us through the argument, what's at risk here? Why you guys chose to do this in this way? It was such a serious piece of work. I was just really interested in that.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. So the San Francisco Chronicle editorial board, which I'm a member of, we have been wanting to just basically explore the state of downtown San Francisco and understand the impact that its devastation could have not only on the city, but also on the state. I primarily cover state policy and politics. And so the angle that I was trying to look at for the editorial board was, what could the state do to help San Francisco? And not only that, what should it do? Because, as has been chronicled very abundantly in a lot of places, the city has mismanaged a lot of its funds. It has abused its funds. It has had people go to prison for, different things that have been going on with fraud and things like that. And so there's this question of, is San Francisco worth saving? And if so, what can actually be done? And what should that template look like? And we were really struck by the example of New York after 9/11, where, obviously after the Twin Towers fell, there was this feeling that no one's going to want to go back to the office because it's so dangerous. And that was posing a huge problem for both the nation and the city. And what you saw was the local government, the state government, and the federal government come together and really advance this comprehensive vision where downtown Manhattan would no longer just be this 9-to-5 business district that, goes dark once work is over for the day. It would be this vibrant mixed-use community where you have more public parks, you have more transit, you have more shopping malls, you have more homes, and developers are given grants to incentivize them to turn those buildings into homes. And so you end up having a safer and more vibrant 24-hour neighborhood, and people want to be there. They don't just feel like they're forced to be there because of work. And that model proved relatively successful in the sense that, 60,000 people moved there. There were a bunch of new shops that opened up. There was new parks, transit. It just became a more diversified economy and neighborhood. And so we really felt like San Francisco for too long has kind of had that same problem in the downtown financial district, where it's literally office buildings and, the coffee shops and cafes that serve those workers. And then once everyone goes home, it's like a ghost town. And you can see that just walking around. I mean, in the olden days, I would be around there at like 5:30. It's dead. And it's not a place that people want to spend time. And so we really felt like we want to argue for this new sort of urban renewal vision of San Francisco, where it has homes and it has entertainment venues and it has biotech and manufacturing and offices, and small businesses and just all of those different things that make it a place people want to be. And so we sort of thought that there were several main components to realizing this vision. And part of it is the city. You know, the city is going to have to do its part to make some of those things easier. It's going to have to make it easier to convert offices into buildings. It's going to have to make it easier to build housing in general. It's going to have to streamline its permitting process for businesses. And we have seen some good action on those fronts recently from local leaders, especially from the mayor, London Breed. And then there are things that the state has to do. The state has to also make it easier for developers to turn offices into housing or into other types of buildings like R&D or manufacturing through grants and through just like legislation statewide that streamlines certain processes. It's going to have to invest in the transit system, which is very critical to downtown San Francisco and also the Bay Area in general. And there's really no way that a system like BART could survive without the state intervening to some extent or another. And then there also has to be improved state action on homelessness and mental health. The reality is there's only so much a city can do. And of course, San Francisco has in some ways mishandled the crisis in its own way. But there's also just a serious lack of, you know, state investments in behavioral health centers and beds. And if San Francisco has nowhere to put people who are suffering, that's also partially the state's problem. And there's legislation to address that. So that's a broad overview of what we argue for.
Yeah, and very detailed. I mean, fantastic. Sort of, you know, comprehensive view of it. What I was really struck by was the kind of urgency that you all brought to this, both as it were negatively and positively. So on the more negative front, you know the argument here you were making was like, if we don't do this, San Francisco could collapse. That was the word that was used, and that was really striking. And actually, so just before, I mean, I want to end on spend most of the time on the positive and the specifics, but. It conjured up this idea of this kind of doom loop. I'm not sure if that was the phrase. I've certainly heard other people talk about your piece in that way, which is it all just gets worse and worse because fewer people go. And so it's easier for the homelessness to take over the streets. And it's just the whole the place feels like somewhere you wouldn't want to go, so that makes it less likely you go. That means there's fewer riders on transit. That means there's less income for the transit companies and so on. And just the whole thing feeds on itself.
Absolutely. No, it is that feeling of a death cycle or spiral or doom loop and vicious circle. I mean, all of those things where if one part of that element breaks down, it's going to affect the rest of the ecosystem. And I think the reason we felt comfortable using a word like collapse is that when you look at San Francisco's economy, 80% of its GDP has been derived from its office industries. And so that really is the financial district. You have a very small swath of the city that is essentially funding the services that the rest of the city uses and is also a massive economic engine for the state of California. And so if you have a situation where those offices are empty, and right now they're at 30% vacancy, which is a record high, and it's the highest 3-year jump of any city in America. So it's a very sizable amount of empty space just sitting there. If those spaces are not filled and there's not, you know, real estate taxes and business taxes and property taxes being paid at the same level, if there's not that demand, what you're going to see is the economy of San Francisco start to crumble. And the city is already projecting a $780 million deficit over the next two fiscal years. And that means that all of these services that address the issues that we're talking about, like homelessness and schools and mental health and all those things, those services are going to crumble if that revenue goes away. And then it's just going to create, you know, a city with less services is going to be a city that's dirtier, not as safe, not as enticing. And then people aren't going to want to go there. And then it's a whole thing like that. Exactly. So, I mean, we really felt that.
And the tourism as well, you know. Yeah,
absolutely. And going off of the tourism, I think one of the things that we also were arguing for, you know, London Breed has put forward this idea of creating like an arts and culture and entertainment zone downtown and just making it easier for the pop-up businesses, you know, making it easier for people to consume alcohol outdoors in certain venues. But the idea is just, you know, making it more attractive, making it more vibrant, And that it's not just, I think part of the problem was that San Francisco, the fact that we had 80% of the GDP focused on that industry means that if those industries collapse or go through a really prolonged downward spiral, there's no other source of income really coming in. And so we felt that the best thing to put forward is this diversified economy where, okay, yeah, you do have some offices, you have biotech, you have all of that, you have medical research, but you still have homes, you have other types of businesses, so that if one thing, you know, is struggling, there's other sources of money that are going to come in and support the economy.
I mean, I think that is so smart, and it's just so true. I mean, if you look at the work, I mean, you know, we all know it, I think, instinctively, but, you know, it's also been empirically established by, you know, people like Richard Florida, who've been working on this, urban theorists and so on, for decades now, actually, that if you have places with that kind of vibrant mixed economy, especially things that are easy to dismiss as kind of superficial or trivial, but bars and clubs and music venues, you know, that actually really makes a difference to the health and life of any place, you know, not just a city, but a town, as much on a smaller base. That's why I thought this was really interesting for the whole of California, actually, not just San Francisco. I mean, the problem is so acute in San Francisco, but this is, I think, the lessons from your piece here, the policy lessons, could be applied throughout the state.
Thank you. No, and, you know, and we feel the same way. And I think that there is state legislation, you know, even if, for example, like the office building to housing thing, if that were a state legislation, mm-hmm. that would apply to the entire state. So you could have downtowns in Fresno and in Los Angeles and Sacramento. I mean, Sacramento has many of the same issues as San Francisco does, you know, and actually there's been a plan advanced by the governor where some of the, ironically, some of the unemployment offices of the state EDD are going to be transformed into housing because those state workers are not working in the offices anymore. And they're smack dab in the middle of downtown. It's mm-hmm. prime real estate. But if they're empty, it becomes derelict. And then there become, you know, homeless people who are camping out in front of it and no one wants to be there. And I see that, you know, walking around downtown all the time. And it's like if you have people living there and you have cafes and you have yoga studios and you have parks and, you know, you have bars and things like that,
yes,
you feel safe walking around downtown, you know, and you want to be there and you don't feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's that classic thing. Who did I talk to about this? Oh, it was when I was talking with Kevin McCarthy, the Democrat representative who actually represents Sacramento.
Yeah.
And in fact, he was involved in the legislation that the government offices to he initiated that, and we had a shared kind of interest in Jane Jacobs, and her kind of way of talking about all this, which was eyes on the street, you know, and I think she talked about the ballet of the street, you know, the kind of that interplay between all these different functions, and that's what you need for a healthy community. I just thought the other thing that really struck me from your piece was that, as you said, it's not like no one's doing anything about this.
Yeah.
Quite the opposite. There's lots of people at different levels trying to address the problems. But it did feel like, I mean, I think you said that it's not enough, you know, and there's a certain way in which it's all kind of slightly stuck in, you know, in some sense understandable. You know, sort of political fiefdoms and bureaucracy, and it's all a little bit slow and a little bit disconnected and just not what we need in terms of the urgency and scale.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think especially in San Francisco, unfortunately, things seem to get, in the past at least, they've gotten caught up in squabbles between the mayor and the board of supervisors. You know, last year they had dueling visions for affordable housing. So they put two different affordable housing measures on the ballot and both failed, you know, because it's contradictory and it's confusing for voters. And, you know, mm-hmm. there's been some positive signs on some of these downtown issues that the supervisors and the mayor are working together, which I think is really positive. But, you know, there also does need to be that sense of ownership from the state as well. And I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens on the transit question because, you know, the governor, obviously the state has its own budget deficit. So it has its own things it's trying to work on. But Newsom proposed cutting, you know, $2 billion from transit capital and then giving no money for transit operations. And essentially, if these agencies do not get some kind of investment, they are going to go belly up. I mean, the problem is they rely so heavily on fare box revenue. And if people are not going back to work, it's going to collapse, but then the right. people that do rely on it are going to have, you know, nowhere to go, nothing to do. And so there have been very long negotiations in Sacramento over this transit, this issue of transit money. And I know lawmakers want to see improved safety and also improved oversight of the agencies. And I think those are great. Those are both needed. And at the same time, we have to ask ourselves, do we want BART, for example, to become a skeleton of what it is? Is that really what we see ourselves, you know, heading into the next 10 years with? Or do we want to invest in building a better and more robust system that does use money more efficiently and does have stronger oversight? But we as a society have made a conscious decision that this is a public good that gets us closer to our equity goals and our climate goals and our housing goals. And we're, you know, we've been building housing densely near transit for years with the idea that people are going to be taking mm-hmm. transit everywhere, right? And if our transit system collapses, that kind of yeah. puts all of that investment that we've done to waste.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I was just thinking back to my day. I mean, I lived in London for most of my sort of after university before moving here. You know, and it's a, I mean, I guess what was the sort of Bay Area population if you add it all up? I mean, it's certainly less than London. I mean, I can't remember actually. If you add up San Jose, San Francisco, Oakland, the Bay Area, is it 5 million? Is something like that? Or is it less than that?
I don't even know. Something like that, I feel like. San Francisco itself is like 900,000.
You know, but it's less than London, right? It's a big sort of metropolis, metropolitan area. But if you compare it to London, and you have one organization, Transport for London, which operates all of the transit, the buses, the underground, the overground trains, you know, it's and you have one fare system and one card that you can use. And it's just, you know, people complain about certain aspects of it, but it's pretty amazing, actually, in getting people around. And it does mean that people have confidence in it and they use it and it works. We have such a fragmented system here in the Bay Area. It's really unbelievable with all the different agencies.
So true. And I'm actually working on a separate piece about public transit in the Bay. And I spent a summer in England. I lived for a year in France. I was just recently in Morocco and all of those. I've also been in Japan and all of those countries have the transit system that I dream of in the United States, right? Where I'm like, how is it so clean? How is it so efficient? How is it so safe? And how is it like so easy to use? And you know, the Oyster card in London, I remember using that. It's just like, you just go and you hop on. And I think there's also a cultural difference where I feel like there's a sense of respect that I observed in those countries where people, they pay even though they don't necessarily have to, like maybe they're not gonna, you know, get caught or whatever, but I just took BART on Saturday and almost every person that I saw get off the train hopped the fare gates. And I think there's a way that certain Americans.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. There's a way that we treat these systems where I feel like there's not this level of desire to invest in it. And there's not a desire to like, oh, I should pay my fair share that I think. And of course there are exceptions and no country is perfect, but I would say globally speaking, the lack of care and personal investment in our collective systems in the US seems to be less than what I've experienced in other countries. And I think that's part of it. I mean, there's not this collective desire of like, I trust this. I want to do my part to make this a good place. I'm going to pay my fair share. It's like, oh, it's here and I'll use it. And like, I don't really care about anything else, you know?
Yeah, and it is true that, look, I would be the first to say, look, you can't just sort of transplant a European country to America and so on, and there are differences, and there's the car culture, and California's different, and you know, Los Angeles is very different. But actually, the Bay Area, to me, is actually, in terms of its size and population and so on, it does resemble, and its cohesiveness, actually, as a kind of unit, it does resemble some of those European metropolitan places. Los Angeles is different, you know, and there's all sorts of reasons, and we can get into that. But the Bay Area really does feel to me like it could and should have that kind of, you know, system. It's amazing that it doesn't, actually. I guess it's historical, accident, as it were, and decentralization of power in different counties. And so, I mean, I'm sure there's a really interesting history of it that's been written.
I'm sure there is, too. And I don't even know all of it. But I mean, I think it is crazy. And I know there is some movement to at least have like one pass for all the Bay Area transit, because right now there are 27 agencies. Right. And like, I think not many of them have different passes. Wow. That you need. And it's like, it's just so confusing. And they're not like integrated like on maps, and so it's just it makes it very challenging. And then yeah, I mean there's just like the basic yeah. issue of safety and cleanliness too that I think often makes many people, you know, it's interesting because
but also yeah. you know, by the way, it's sorry you go ahead.
No go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that it's actually really a central part of the overall argument, because for example, if you had a really quick and easy and affordable way for someone who lives down, you know, I live down on the peninsula, to get up to the city for, I don't know, meet someone for a drink or go to a comedy show or a gig or whatever. And it's not this whole kind of, oh, I have to drive and park and this and that, you know, but I just hop on that's part of that mixed use. That's part of that sense of turning it into, turning downtown San Francisco into a place that people you go for all sorts of different reasons. And actually other place, Oakland, you know, like actually, you know, I love Oakland. It's a fantastic place. I go out there for a night out every now and again, but it's a big deal to plan a night out in Oakland. You know, like, I mean, even, you know, you can't even get there. If I try to, I've done it, you know, and I remember because of all my instincts, just like you were saying, when I first moved here, were, you know, coming from London. So I had my bike and I would dutifully cycle to the train, to the Caltrain station, and then get from the train, Caltrain to BART and whatever. And by the time I get there, it's like 2 hours. Yeah. That's crazy.
No, it literally is. It literally is. I know. It's very painful. I mean, I'm even frustrated because even taking the train from Sacramento to San Francisco, it's like irritating to me that there's a point that I have to transfer to a bus to go over into San Francisco. And like, there's always a wait for the bus. And I'm like, I just want one train that goes directly there, you know? And I mean, there's just so amazing. Many things in California like that. I mean, another great example, I was thinking about this too, is the bullet train, because when I was in Morocco, they literally have a bullet train, and it was actually built by the people yes. that originally were going to build it in California. And then they were like, this is insane. And they left, and here we are. And our train is $100 billion over budget. And I just feel like that kind of illustrates the, and there's so many reasons why California is different than other countries, but as someone who loves public transit and just loves the cultural aspect of it and the climate aspect of it and the ability to not have to worry about parking and driving, which I hate, it frustrates me that we aren't better.
Yes.
Because these are the very people that BART and other systems need to win over in order to make themselves financially solvent.
Yes.
And like, even I, who love BART, I'm like disincentivized to ride it. Because it's not reliable and it's not clean and it's not safe, even though I love it. And it's like, if I'm having this struggle, the average person who doesn't even, you know, it's not a big deal for them, they're going to drive.
I know. I totally agree. I felt the same way. And I sort of gradually ended up, you know, defaulting to what everyone else does. So I, like, you know, culturally, like I, for the first few years, I really did do what I described. And I'd always think about, well, if I'm meeting someone here or there, I'll go on the bike and the train or whatever. And I thought, this is crazy. I'll just drive like everyone else,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And that's what happens, because it's just, in the end, that's more convenient. And if you're going to change people's behavior, you have to offer a more attractive alternative.
You do.
And then I think people will. And actually, and there's a lovely, I think we're really, funnily enough, we spend most of the conversation on transit, but it's such an integral part of life in a kind of, you know, an area like the Bay Area, and there's the lovely classnessness to it. The fact that if you go on the tube in London or wherever, you know, everyone's there together, of all classes, all ages, all backgrounds. There's something really unifying about that. It really is a lovely thing.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that that's the type of thing that creates a healthy culture, and you know, people, you're exposed to people that are different than you, and you end up meeting people, you have good conversations, and I mean. It's also, like I said, it's integral to the housing too, because we've been wanting to encourage people to get rid of their cars.
Yeah.
And we've been saying over and over again, we want to build densely near transit. And there, I mean, as I take BART frequently, and as I'm going up to San Francisco, you know, you go through Oakland, there's a ton of projects right next to the BART tracks that are in the process of being built. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, if BART collapses, what's the point of having these houses right here? Because
they're not viable.
Yeah. Exactly.
Really interesting. I just, well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I think this is such a great I think you made a real impact. I just anecdotally, I mean, I'm sure you have the data and the numbers of how many people read it and shared it and so on. I have a sense that you made real waves with this piece, and a lot of work went into it, and it's just incredibly high quality. And I'm certainly going to be diving into these policy areas because I think they're so important. So I just want to say, honestly, thank you. It's just been great. I loved talking to you about it today, but thanks for you and your colleagues for doing the work. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. No, that really means a lot, and I really appreciate you featuring it on your show. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you, and we'll see you soon. Great. I love that. Yes, I am a geek about transit. We call it public transport in England. That's what we used to call it. Here it's transit, transportation, whatever. It's really a big part of daily life, and that we probably don't talk about it enough. And all those issues, actually, in that conversation with Emily, I think are really, really important. We're going to get stuck into them much more because, like I said, we say it all the time. We need positive, practical, problem-solving policies to turn things around in California, not just this kind of endless ideological kind of gesture politics that we seem to be getting all the time. We need to actually solve these problems. And that conversation shows that it's not impossible. We can do things. We just need the right attitude and the right leaders to do it. All right. Hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you follow us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you back here soon for the next episode of The Steve Hilton Show.